into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot, don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah. No,
videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports. Ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
Now you're welcome along to the football show. We're busy this evening. Later on we'll hear from Tom English over at the BBC in Scotland. They are through to their first championships in 23 years. We, as we know, are not. And we're in the midst of a three-game spell at the moment. Beaten on Thursday, beaten last night. And Bulgaria to come at home Wednesday. We have commentary of that game, by the way, live for you. David Myler, you're very welcome.
Joe, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm in good form. The performance yesterday then, give us your assessment of the game.
Good in large parts of the game. A lot of positive stuff again, but it's almost the same drum we're all beating. It's just where the goal's going to come from. I think that's the biggest thing in the game. So Stephen's been in charge. There's been some, you know, great build-up play, you know, a lot more possession, some intricate passing, some good movement, stuff like that. We're creating chances, but it's just a case of who's going to put their hand up and put the ball in the back of the net. That just seems to be our biggest problem. The biggest thing from that game yesterday, probably for me, was Wales found a way to win. In the past, Ireland, in the teams I've been involved in, we've found ways to win games. And at the moment, Stephen's just missing that bit of luck, I suppose, to, you know, a ball to go in off someone's backside or something that will just get you over the line to get that first win.
So having played in teams that sometimes, as you, to use your phrase there, find ways to win, what's the mentality of those types of teams? And do you see that at the moment?
Look, a lot of the lads I play with are still around. Of course, you know, I would have played with John O'Shea, Robbie Keane, Shay Given. You know, those lads, all right, yeah, they're gone a few years now. But in the sense that, like, James McLean just always found ways to pop up with big goals. If you look at the, you know, the Wales game, certainly, Austria, you know, even I think it's tonight, a few years ago, we beat Bosnia where Walter scored the two goals at home. Like, it's just kind of, there was always someone there who would put the ball in the back of the net. And I know James is still around, but it can't all rely on him. But it's just, somebody has to find a way to put the ball in the back of the net. Because we are creating chances. We'd be having a totally different conversation if we weren't, but we are. Mm. It's just that, you know, and Adam is a young lad. He is still learning his trade. Like, he's not played a load of games at senior, you know, never mind senior international football, but even at senior level, you know, with Norwich. So we can't be too downhearted. You know, Stephen's had a lot to face in his time, certainly in the games. Like, you look, I believe for the Bulgaria game, there's 12, you know, senior players missing, which is remarkable. But at the same time, that can't really be used as an excuse because, you know, there should be players available, which there are. So it's an opportunity for those who can step up and play.
It is tough, though. Like, he has had an incredibly disruptive start, there is no doubt. And they're missing 13 players now from the original squad for Bulgaria. And they're not just anybody as well. They're the likes of Seamus Coleman, Jeff Hendrick, Adam Ida, Malumbi's out, Enda Stevens missing, Aaron Connolly missing, Alan Brown, James McCarthy missing, Callum Robinson, John Egan, Harry Arter. Now, you know, like, we can't cope with that, really.
No, but we have to.
In terms of being fair to Stephen Kenny here, like, that
That is very tough. Look, it's like picking between your son and daughter at the moment, if whether it's Seamus Coleman plays or Matt Doherty, right? That's fine. You know, obviously Matt is, you know, obviously picked up coronavirus, so we hope he's all right, and the same with James. But then you'd have, right, either one of them plays fullback. Then you'd have Egan alongside Duffy, and you'd have Enda. There's three of the back four gone, you know, and even the toss-up between Seamus, that's the other one, is gone as well. So, like, there's four, you know, key defenders. Then, of course, look, Jeff has picked up the suspension, you know, for the tackle. I think he has to make the tackle, really. Then you look at Harry Arter, could play. You know, Malumbi has come on in massive strides since Stephen has taken over. Like, and then you've got Connolly, Callum Robinson, Adam Ida, you know, who picked up an injury. It's just, there's just, there's nearly another 11 there, you know. Randolph seems to be always fit and available, so that's good. But just all those players, it is, and it has been tough on him. But at the same time, you know, Joe, he's got to find a way to get results. And we can sit here and say he's very unlucky, which he is, but we need results.
So in terms of the positives yesterday then and the chances created, how many good chances did we create?
Well, how good is a chance? You know, if you think about it, it's only, you could talk about like how many times did the keeper have to make good saves. He did have two or three to make, but at the same time, they're only as good as, you know, the person on the end of it who's going to put it in the back of the net.
Yeah.
You know, we can talk about half chances or big chances. So there were, look, there were chances. You know, I think certainly if you looked at, say, if you were to compare Adam Eda to, say, James Collins been around, I think James is the same age as me. I think he's 31. Mm. He's been around for years, you know, playing out through the leagues in English football. But even when he came on that 15 minutes, there was almost that natural goal scorer feeling on the pitch. And that's not to take nothing away from Adam at the same time. But James, any ball that kind of hopped, he wanted to, you know, shoot. Like he had, like, albeit they weren't fantastic efforts, but like, you know, that really troubled the keeper. But he looked lively. And it would be interesting. I'd like to see him, you know, go from the front and lead the line against Bulgaria.
Mm. And what are you seeing in general patterns of play then in Irish efforts to keep the ball? Now, and like, you know, the way this conversation is increasingly being framed is that somehow Ireland trying to keep the ball is the reason they're losing. You know, it's not. Booting the ball long is not going to be more effective here. But in terms of general play, the quality of player and what they're doing, what are you seeing? Because at times, I must confess, you're watching, you know, watching the game last night. There are numerous times where you're looking at individuals and it's a poor touch or it's a misplaced pass and you're thinking, you should be doing better there.
Yeah, that comes down to the players themselves.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I looked at the England game the other night. Mm. It was a prime example of, look, I was on the following morning with the lads and I said, you've got to earn the right to play out from the back. Like at times, you know, Duffy was receiving the ball from a goal kick off Randolph and then he was playing to Cyrus. And it was a bit like, we don't need to keep playing all the time and, you know, inviting that pressure onto us. I think last night was done better in the sense that we didn't always attempt to play out. It's kind of like finding that right balance. And, you know, England are a very good team. We got punished and we turned over possession a lot more than we should have. That were like unforced errors, kind of like trying to overemphasize the fact that, look, lads, we're here, we're at Wembley, we're playing against a good nation, we're going to play football and we're going to really implement their style. Mm. Like, I think last night they found a better balance, certainly in the first half. I think they just, you're talking there about, yes, the touches, it's kind of, they're small little margins that players, you know, themselves will have to improve on.
And they will have to because the Kenny plan doesn't work unless they do that, unless they bridge that gap. And
well, not only the Kenny plan, but no plan works.
True, but we're talking about Stephen Kenny here. Yeah, yeah, no, I accept your point. No plan works. I mean, if we're going to play football, we have to play football. The interesting question is going to be whether over the next couple of games, and again, you know, the clock is starting to tick because World Cup qualification is around the corner, but over the next couple of games, as players become a bit more used to things, will that side of their games improve and suddenly a bit sharper, a bit more used to, a bit more comfortable in those situations? Or will there just be some kind of ceiling and there will be an inconsistency to their touches and their passes because they're being put under pressure by other world-class players and there is just a limit to the players we have at the moment?
Well, I wouldn't say there's a limit to the players we have. I think if you stop and, you know, step back and look at the bigger picture here, right? Are all of our players playing week in, week out? And the answer is no. And that does factor into, you know.
But isn't that because there is a limit to them? You know, there's a reason they're playing where they're playing or not playing. Like, we have to be realistic and we have to, you know, talk about things honestly.
100% agree. But I definitely, you know, like when it comes to them playing, if lads are coming in, like the big example I'll use, right, with Shane Duffy. Right. And I know he's come into some criticism recently and, you know, I'm not here to bash Duffy. But in the first games under Stephen's tenure, you know, Duffy was a bit all over the place. Then he went to Celtic and he got himself into a bit of a rhythm, got himself into a bit of form, you know, got playing games. Now, look, it hasn't gone fantastically well for him in the last two or three games. He'd be the first to admit that himself. But you could see the progression in him from playing games. At the same time, we have a lot of lads that aren't playing enough games, so that when they come away with, you know, with Stephen and Keith and Damien, that they're ready for the games. Mm. You know, that's the big thing. If you're playing regular football, then it just kind of flows from one into the next. But like, how, like, if you looked at the minutes of some of the players that are playing, they've not played, you know, significant football with their clubs. So then when you come away, you're going to struggle because you're not match fit, you're not match sharp. And then the biggest test is international football, because you're playing against the, you know, whatever country you're playing against the selected best players from that country that are available at that time. So it's going to be difficult. And if these, that's the big thing for me, is like, when, once the Bulgaria game is over, lads need to go away and they need to really knuckle down and get themselves regularly playing. Like, if you looked, you know, you can go through, we could go through the whole squad and kind of say like who's there, whatever. But those little details matter, that training is unopposed. As much as, you know, training can, you know, can be a good standard, and, you know, you can rev on that, it's going really well, but it's matches that matter. When, you know, someone is really, really trying to stop you doing your job, they're really pressing you, do you know what I mean? They're in your face, you know, they're trying to get on the ball, they're trying to make it as difficult. You know, training sometimes pass you by, and you can't get that level unless you're playing games week in, week out.
That's a very fair point. And that explains some of the sloppiness that I'm talking about then.
Yeah, 100%. Because, like I said, like, in training, it's fine going up against people, and, you know, but it's nowhere near the same level as a match. When you go out and you're playing, whether some of our lads are in the Championship or the you know, Premier League, it's Saturday, Tuesday, of course, with COVID, you know, the Premier League have games more often. We've a couple of lads obviously playing Europa League, so that's handy. But you can certainly tell the lads, in my opinion, who have played a lot of football, who are, you know, that bit sharper and that bit more switched on, opposed to the lads who haven't.
Mm. Ida, for instance, you know, is not really getting many minutes. You know, he's in.
Yeah, well, that's the problem, big thing, you know? For Adam. Yeah, that is the big thing for Adam, and he needs to find a way to get more minutes.
And have you liked, you know, him being given his chance of late? Like, what we're seeing at the moment on Kenny's part is an investment here in Ida, and there's definitely some short-term pain for sure. But I mean, I'm not sure what his alternatives are.
Yeah, it seems. Look, I like Adam. I think he's a good young player, and I think he's going to have a fantastic career. Please God, he'll score tons and tons of goals for Ireland. But at the same time, he's learning his trade, and, you know, Stephen is giving him experience, which will only benefit us in the long run. It's one of those that you'll have your negative nanny sitting, kind of going, "Well, we've got this 19-year-old leading the line. Is he going to score? He's not playing." But at the same time, are there, how many other strikers are knocking on the door to say, like, "Well, put me in ahead of him"? We don't have that. You know, David McGoldrick is now retired, who probably would have been the one that was, you know, Adam would have learned off him, but now Adam has been thrown into the deep end. And look, it's going to be tough for him, but, you know, he certainly, in the games he's played, he's coming on, he's getting better. But the big thing, even for someone like Adam, is he needs to get back to Norwich and find a way to get into the team to be playing regular football.
Because the thing here, you know, so 6 games and no goals, we're at a strange, it's almost like statistical anomaly point here. But if you stretch that out, that what's going on at the moment, just out a little bit longer, like post Robbie Keane, we've always struggled for goals. Like you mentioned McLean, he hasn't scored since the Martin O'Neill era. It's not just under Stephen Kenny. Over the last 3 seasons, I was reading today in the Irish Examiner, Ireland have scored 3.5 seasons. Ireland have managed 20 goals. You know, Shane Long hasn't scored, for instance, in 4 years. This is a post Robbie Keane problem, far more than it is a Stephen Kenny creation at the moment.
Yeah. Maybe as much as we all appreciate Robbie, but maybe we didn't appreciate him enough.
We appreciated him massively, and it wasn't even close to enough.
Yeah, do you know, in the sense that I think, off the top of my head, I think Robbie's 147 caps, 68 goals, like, which is outrageous, which is unheard of. But even so, like, I know you brought up Longy there. Shane didn't feature much under Mick, didn't play toward, you know, with Martin at the back end of, you know, Martin's management. And then he's not really been involved with Stephen. So I think it's a bit unfair. But at the same time, you're right.
His goals per game isn't the issue, but the fact he's not featuring for a reason. It's an example, you know, that we just haven't had anyone step in.
I know, and that's the worrying thing. Do you know, if we were defenders, we could kind of say, well, you could teach a fella, but at the same time, strikers are in, it's an art, you know, to be able to be in the right place at the right time, to be able to put the ball in the back of the net. And we don't, at the moment, we don't have someone to do it regularly. We've not had someone, as you said there. It's kind of crazy when you hear that stats, you know, and the amount of games we played over the past few years. Even when you look at the big results we've had, they've only, or the big results we've had in big games,
yeah,
they're only ever 1-0, or, you know, the Bosnian game I mentioned, is we won that 2-0. Do you know what I mean? So it's a tough one.
And that's why it's very tempting for people to text in and say, well, look, we just need to go back to being hard to beat and try and nick a goal. But I don't see a reason why we can't be hard to beat and stop conceding the silly goals we've conceded over the last while, but still try and pass with some kind of methodology. Because otherwise, if we go back to just, you know, the spirit of Richard Dunn in Moscow, you know, if we go back to that, our only goals are going to come from chance. You know, we're looking for a knockdown. There's no pattern. We're not in control of our own destiny here. It's just almost random chance, a ball falling to someone, or just out of nowhere, a piece of football breaking out. Like, that's caveman stuff. We can't go back to that. And there was a good point yesterday made, I think it was by Eamon Sweeney in the Sunday Independent. He was saying, you know, you watch the England game a couple of times towards the end, probably out of fatigue and everything else, we booted the ball long, just get rid of it because we're under so much pressure. So what happens, only England regather possession instantly and come right back at us?
Yeah, no, I think you're right. But at the same time, we need to find the balance of it.
Mm.
That when we're not in possession, we have to be very solid and very hard to beat and be horrible. And you brought up Donny's performance at Moscow, a bit like that. But when we win possession back, that's when, you know, you break out into your patterns of play. What are we going to do? We're going to knock it round. We're going to, you know, we're not going to turn over possession or just lump it long. That's the kind of, we need to, Stephen needs to find the kind of balance of that. There's always moments in games, you know, you're on top, you have that little dominant part of possession, and then you lose possession. The team gets a bit of rhythm going, you know, they get a chance or they get a corner or, you know, something, the momentum swings, that we then need to become difficult to beat. But then once we regain possession, turn it over, that we can break forward and express ourselves without, like you said, going back to, you know, lashing it long, hoping for the best, picking up a second ball, and then, you know, just creating a half a chance that somebody ends up sticking the back in the net.
You could definitely see, I mean, a high pressing game in those first couple of Kenny games. That was clearly a point of emphasis. Is that enduring? Are we still seeing that? And to use your phrase, are we horrible enough to play against without the ball?
I don't think we're as horrible as we used to be. But then that might rely on personnel. Like if you looked at, like if you look at the midfielders, say if I compare when I played, when I was in or around this team, I'm a totally different midfielder to say Jeff or Connor. You know, both very neat and tidy on the ball, get on it, make stuff happen, very intricate passing, good players. But I was the one who was, you know, the enforcer, the one who kind of ran over people trying to win the ball back. So it's kind of different personalities. I think someone like Jason Malumbi has probably a bit more bite in him. So like against England, we probably were, looking back on it, we probably were a bit soft, and probably, like, there's been a lot made of, you know, Matt Doherty's interview where he, you know, he touched on being embarrassed, but it was almost, I think we were probably just throwing the towel a little bit, that the game kind of passed us by. So, you know, you're talking about the high press. The only thing is, you have to, with the high presses, you have to know when you're going to do it, and then you can't just keep pressing and pressing that then, okay, they've beaten the press, let's drop back, be solid, be hard to beat, regather ourselves. So, you know, definitely in the games, you know, the Bulgaria-Finland games, we did press well. Wales yesterday, we did press well. I think, you know, that's the good thing about, say, you know, someone like James McLean, the team, because he's very fit. He can maintain that. And look, James won a lot of balls. The press has been good, but it's just, can we maintain it? And then knowing when to come off it, to be solid, to then say, right, here we go again. Do you know what I mean?
So a bit more horrible to play against would be good. In terms of nicking goals, in the short term, we're going to need everybody to chip in. We're going to need the odd free kick. We're going to need corners. We're still going to need Shane Duffy to head them in, and we're going to need a striker who can score a few. The patterns, though, do you like what you see there? You know, the way we're moving it. It's not ad hoc stuff. You're seeing players who know what they're meant to be doing, and the team who knows how they're trying to manipulate the ball and the opposition.
Yeah, well, you say that as almost as if, you know, when I played under Martin or whatever, the lads who played under Mick, like, that we didn't know what we were doing. We did. I think with the way they're playing, yes, they do know what they're doing, but they should know what they're doing. They're international footballers. It's a case of they've got to go out. I think what Stephen is re-emphasising is the playing, that the players have to take on the responsibility, that you can't just allow, for argument's sake, if Randall gives the ball to Duffy, if he faces a bit of pressure, he needs 2-3 options so people can pass him the ball, that we can't just allow him to, you know, smash the ball up the pitch, that, you know, we've got to take responsibility to make those angles. Do you know the biggest thing that you always hear ex-professionals talk about? Being brave isn't necessarily going and tackling someone. It's about going and getting on the ball when someone is breathing down your neck to help your mate out. And I think we have done that. I think we've been better at it. Certainly in my time, there could have been more of it. Yeah, definitely. But over the last few games, there are definitely, you know, there's been a lot of bravery. And I think the one player I'd single out that I've been impressed with is Jeff Hendrick.
Yeah, he's getting a lot of criticism. He's been much better.
Do you know what the thing is? All those people who give him criticism, look at him, right? In the sense that he goes and he gets on the ball everywhere. Now, yes, does Jeff give the ball away? Yes, he does, right? Fine. But Jeff is always the one trying to get the ball off the centre half. He doesn't hide. He goes and gets it. He tries to make things happen.
Yeah.
He's done that, you know, look, for years. But that's the thing. He's now being, you know, Stephen's deploying him in that deeper role. But, like, he's going on, he's getting on the ball a lot, and he's trying to make stuff happen.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's going to lose possession. Of course, some of the areas, there was certainly the one yesterday, I think it was Dan James nicked it off and he turned and he had the, you know, the swipe out of him. Probably not the best area for Jeff to lose the ball. But at the same time, I think to him, you know, fair play. He's really buying into what Stephen wants. And he is trying to be the man that controls the game for Ireland, who dictates the tempo. And he's making, like, a huge effort at it. Whereas other lads aren't doing the amount he is. And, you know, the criticism he gets is totally unfair.
Sometimes you're better off just hanging out in the background and not being as noticed. But you saw glimpses of his quality too. That little dink over the top for Horgan at Wembley. And, you know, that's where you want. That's where you presume the likes of Damien Duff and Keith Andrews and Stephen Kenny are just saying to Adam Eda, you know, you need to be on the end of that. Come on, let's, you know, got to get there. So we're in the midst of growing pains at the moment, to wrap this up. I'm afraid of the answer to this, because if I was to say to you, say you were on an opposition team to Ireland at the moment.
Yeah.
Quite a lot of opposition teams would much rather Ireland are playing this nice ball at the moment than if Ireland were just rolling the sleeves up, we're going to kick lumps out of you, and we're just going to keep piling the ball up to the big lad up top and look for second balls off him for 90 minutes, and it's going to be war. I suspect a lot of opposition teams would say, oh, that would be a nightmare, 90 minutes. But the point we're making here is that has a lower ceiling ultimately. That has a shorter shelf life ultimately, is it?
Well, I think if the big thing I'd take, right, would be the post-match interviews yesterday. I saw Ben Davis speaking and I saw Gareth Bale speaking. And they both said, we knew what kind of game it was going to be. It was going to be, you know, a tougher game. Even when I go back to, you know, the draw at the Aviva, Aaron Ramsey spoke after and he said, we knew how difficult they would be to play against us. And he kind of made a token cheek remark, like, that they've got this new philosophy of playing. So at the same time, these lads have played against us over the years, you know, from probably, what, 2016 onwards, 17. So they've played against us numerous times where we've gone for the inverted commas long ball, you know, being that dogged team that was really hard to beat, to now changing to a more passing. And they're still saying it's, you know, a tough team to play against. So, yes, we're changing our philosophy and there's more passages of play. We're getting on the ball. We're trying to be more, you know, possession-based team. But at the same time, the opposition we've played against have said that we're still as, you know, difficult to play against. So that can only, in my mind, be a positive.
Yeah, unless that's just something that players say in interviews, you know. They're, they are, you know. players lie as well.
Yeah, they do. They do. Not everyone is honest. They're all media trained.
Yeah. But so we'll see tomorrow. Look, we listed off the players missing there, and the Matt Doherty news broke today as well. You know, he's struck down with COVID as well. This has been really, really difficult. Like, it couldn't have been more messy for Stephen Kenny. It's been really tricky. A win tomorrow would, one, stave off potential relegation in the Nations League. It would, one, or sorry, Wednesday, stave off relegation in the Nations League. It would keep our Pot 2 hopes alive in the World Cup. Like, we are right on the precipice now. So that is important. Like, there is a pragmatic point to Wednesday. And then maybe of similar importance, it would just, David, be a little bit of coolant on this brewing sense of, oh, this new style isn't working out so well, which is, you know, is there to some degree or other from people watching it. And even if you disagree with them, you know, and it's hard to argue with them if the results refuse to come.
I think the big thing about tomorrow night's game is
Wednesday. What are we both at here? Sorry.
I know.
My fault. Wednesday. It's Wednesday. Monday. It's Monday, Wednesday. Everyone. Unfortunately, yeah, it's still Monday.
Oh, no. Sorry. Apologies. I think the big thing about the Bulgaria game is I want them to get a result, because every time I listen to, you know, one of the players speak in, or, you know, even Steven, the manager, there's just that sense of, you know, frustration that we've not been able to get a result when the performances have warranted results, that they've not been able to get one. And I just want them to get one to kind of get that one off the shoulder, that it's done. Mm. You know, somebody has scored a goal, and then it's a case of we've won a game. And then that lift that will give it, you know, give the group going into the March when the World Cup qualifiers start, that it's kind of, regardless of, look, it won't be great to be relegated. Of course, look, if we're pot three rather than pot two, that's, you know, we're more inclined to get, you know, bigger nations, of course, which would make the qualifying group a lot tougher. But at the same time, I just want them to get the win for the fact of, I think, the group deserve it. They've been doing well, and, you know, there's just been so much, well, there's been negativity around the place from all different angles. And I think they've deserved the result over the way they've played and, you know, in the games. And look, I just hope that Wednesday night is the time that they can get it.
Yeah, it'd be great. It'd be great. Excellent as always, David Myler. Thanks so much.
Cheers, Joe.
Cheers. David Myler there giving us his thoughts on where Ireland are. We have that game again live on Wednesday. Hopefully it's an Ireland win at last. And we have Tom English from Scotland. They're obviously going to the Euros. We'll talk to Tom English next over in BBC Scotland.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See Dunlewy.net.
We'll be looking on next year. Scotland will be there. They'll be at the Euros in extraordinary fashion, is how they secured their place. So we'll hear from Celtic's Ryan Christie here. It was against Serbia. It was last week. I'm sure you all know at this stage. Christie scored on the night. He was then subbed off. 3 minutes later, Serbia equalised, extra time, penalties ensued, and he had to watch on.
I don't know. It's just an amazing night. I think, from the start, we kind of believed. Obviously, the last kind of couple of camps, we've picked up so much belief in each other. The Gaff mentioned it before the game, that kind of Czech Republic came away in the last kind of 10 minutes, and even the way the game went tonight, you know, kind of conceding that late equaliser and still digging in, and then penalties, you know, away from home, and Big Marsh again comes up. Amazing, unbelievable.
You did the business in the second half there, but then you had to watch the goal going in, then the penalties as well. How tough was that for you?
Yeah, it's not nice. When you're on the pitch, you always feel like you can impact it. The moment you're off, you can't watch it. It's horrible. Those penalties are probably the worst thing I've ever been through. But just for everything, you know. Oh, I'm gone.
Czech Republic, England, Croatia. What does that sound like now? You're going to the Euros.
Yeah, it's just for, you know, the whole nation. It's been a horrible year for everyone. We knew that coming into the game, we could give a little something to this country, and I hope everyone back home is on our party tonight, because we deserve it. You know, we've been through so many years. We know it, you know it, everyone knows it, and the monkey off the back now, and we're just going to move on from here.
There you are, Ryan Christie. Let's go to the BBC's Tom English. Evening, Tom.
Hi, Joe.
Suddenly your year next year has got a whole lot brighter.
Not half. Mind you, it's long overdue, isn't it? Mm. 22 years. And you can hear in Ryan Christie's voice there from last Thursday night, an awful lot of Scotsmen and women would have been feeling the same way as he was.
Yes, I'm sure. And I mean, even Steve Clarke, the manager these days, he said as soon as Serbia equalised, we thought to ourselves, OK, the Scottish script is about to enact.
Yeah, listen, everybody did. For 90 minutes, Scotland had played really well against Serbia and weren't looking in any danger at all. And then, of course, the sucker punch of the equaliser in with 2 minutes or something of extra time to play. And I think everyone in Scotland, the fatalism that has surrounded Scotland, the national team for 2 decades, came back. And I don't think there would have been too many Scots, apart from the players on the pitch, who believed that Scotland were going to do it. But they did it. It was a glorious twist to the usual narrative for Scotland. It was incredible. And, you know, people have been ground down in Scotland, Joe, over the last 20 years about the national team. Like Steve Clarke, he came in and his first home crowd was about 30,000. Then it was down to 25. Then it dropped below 20. And people, I think, kind of inoculated themselves against disappointment by saying it didn't matter anymore. International football didn't matter. They kind of convinced themselves that it didn't matter because Scotland constantly let them down. Mm. But on Thursday night, when Scotland won and they qualified, all that emotion came absolutely rising to the top. And we could see that, of course, it mattered. It mattered hugely. Not just the football fans, dyed-in-the-wood football fans, but the entire country. I mean, football, as we know, can reach parts that a lot of other sports can't reach. And my God, it reached all around Scotland last Thursday night.
Well, I suppose in Scotland, it is the main sport in so much as I can see, and football is the ultimate meritocracy. So, and there's such a rich history. So 1998 is a long, long time ago. I can understand how people, you know, shut themselves off, Tom, like after a bad breakup. They couldn't love again. Is Andy Murray okay? I mean, has anyone checked his heart rate?
Well, did you see the video of Andy Murray?
That's what I mean. I mean, I think he got up to almost a decibel. Yay! He must have been a sleeping child in the house, perhaps.
I think he was doing a best impersonation of Steve Clarke, who's also fantastically, heroically deadpan, no matter the circumstances.
So tell us, how has this happened? Is this long strategic build-up and you've produced a higher calibre of player? Is this a bunch of misfits who've come together? Is this a golden generation? And Clark's role in all this, because certainly, again, from our slightly afar perspective, Clark was at Reading and West Brom and it looked like his career was not really going to catch fire. And then, he pitches up at Kilmarnock and you kind of think that's the last I'll really hear from Steve Clark at a certain level. So a lot has happened here.
A lot has happened. I mean, and there's been renaissance, not just of Steve Clarke, which began at Kilmarnock, but also of a number of players in this team. I mean, David Marshall, his last year, he's bounced around from different clubs in the Championship. He's currently with Derby, bottom of the Championship, 1-9, I think. Got done 4-0 by Blackburn not that long ago, and now he's a national hero. Declan Gallagher of Motherwell. If you'd said a year ago that Declan Gallagher was going to be one of Celtic's 3 centre-halves, people would have fallen off the chair. This is Declan Gallagher who 5 years ago was in prison for assault.
Right.
Took a baseball bat to a guy and did a year. And now he's a national hero. I mean, what Clark did, he came in and he recognised the incredible negativity of the fans and of the media, and he was amazingly strong. He just took it all on his shoulders. He says, no, we will get better. And the job he did at Kilmarnock was incredible. I mean, really, really good.
Right.
He decided to go from a 4 to a 3 at a back. Everyone was against that. He decided to make Scott McTominay his right centre half. Everyone said, you're mad. He's a midfielder. He turned him into a centre half. Brought in Gallagher. Everyone says, it's a Motherwell centre half. Gallagher has been tremendous. Converted Tierney from a left back to a left centre-back, which allowed Andy Robertson to play left wing-back. All of the problems that were there for years and years, he fixed them. He found Lyndon Dykes, a striker, who's not going to score a million goals, but Lyndon Dykes is a workhorse and massively effective in the air and has that Aussie, he's the Australian kind of surfer dude. he has that Australian self-belief, and that has coursed through the entire team. So Clark has fixed a lot of problems that people couldn't, other managers before him could not fix.
Okay, very impressive. Who was last man in? Alex McLeish.
Alex McLeish, in fairness to Alex McLeish, Alex McLeish got them into the playoffs. And then Clark had to beat Israel in the semi-final and then Serbia in the final. But Alex McLeish also lost in March last year 3-0 to Kazakhstan, which went down as arguably and probably the worst Scotland performance ever. That was only March last year. And Clark came in and everyone, it was like unanimous, everybody wanted Clark because Clark had gone to Kilmarnock and Kilmarnock had caused untold problems for Rangers, caused problems for Celtic. His team were incredibly well organised. He was a big, strong character. So it was total unanimity for Clark to move into the Scotland job. And we thought, like, if anyone was going to turn this around, that it was going to be Steve Clark. And he's done it. I mean, yeah, they lost yesterday against Slovakia, but that was their first defeat in 9 games. And actually, they played really well. They deserved to win that game. Mm.
The points you mentioned about McTominay and Tierney and Robertson, all very interesting. What brand of football does Clark have them playing on the ball?
What he wanted to do was get a team that was hard to beat. It was hard to score against because Scotland were the softest of soft touches in defence. And that's what he did at Kilmarnock. He made them hard to beat, made them incredibly well organised at the back, and he went from there. He says he's going to add a bit of bells and whistles, not scoring anywhere near the amount of goals that they need to score if they want to move up a level. But his job, the first phase of the kind of the rebuild, if you like, was to make them harder to beat, make them more of a unit, more together, happier as players. I mean, you know, for a good number of years now, the Scotland players, not all the time, but quite often, were pretty downtrodden. They were demoralised, not just by the results, but by the mood in the country. Every press conference, it was a combat zone because they saw the press as negative, talking them down, and they were fighting against that. For years and years, they've been fighting against that. McLeish was fighting against it. His predecessor, Gordon Strachan, was fighting against it. And Clark seems to have lightened the mood. And you know, the only way to lighten the mood is to win matches. And it is a real positive environment now. People, journalists, fans are not quite sure what to do with themselves because there's all this optimism swirling about the place.
Because the press in Scotland can be feisty enough.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And angry and reflective of the support, to be honest, Joe. The support are very angry. And it's the national sport, as you say. It's a national obsession. It's not just a national sport. If you pick up any, it doesn't matter how poor the national team might be doing or how poorly the clubs might be doing in Scotland. The coverage is still the same. It's massive coverage. There's obviously no G. There's a bit of rugby and there's a bit of horse racing, but there's not much else and nothing, bar Andy Murray, is going to wipe football off the back pages of the newspapers over here.
Yes, so I can see how 23 years starts to build a little bit, to say the least. England, I mean, that's another little cherry, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, yeah. At Wembley, you know, it was 2-2 the last time they played. Scotland blew it again, you know. You talk about that, they were 2-1 up, going into injury time, and Harry Kane scored an equaliser. That's going to be, listen, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter who they were playing, but the fact that it's England at Wembley is going to add that extra bit of spice. And, you know, they're talking about, you know, everyone now is engaged in this fun game of picking their squad, the 23-man squad for next summer. They're talking about what the Scotland song is going to be. You have this bizarre narrative of this Baccarat song. Yes, sir, I can boogie. Everyone's talking about that. So this thing has gone off in all sorts of completely weird directions.
Yeah, it's the fun of it. I mean, think back when we were going to tournaments and the last 6 months of the league, are, you know, there's like an Irish watch with the Euros in mind, you know, and that is half the fun and the excitement. And I don't know, I guess we're just going to support our Celtic brethren over here, that we don't have many options here. But
We'll be back.
Yeah. It is amazing for Clark. That is some turnaround. Like I said, he had been roundly dismissed, you know, had been a familiar face at Chelsea for a long time, got his chance. You presume that's the end. But now suddenly, geez, his future looks a lot brighter, even beyond the Scotland job.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I interviewed him after two games of his reign. And, you know, he got it at that point. He got the negativity. He understood how pessimistic and how disaffected the support was. And I interviewed him at the Hampden Park Hall of Fame. And, you know, you can imagine the names in the Scottish Football Hall of Fame. And he just looked around and he says, wow, there's some amount of legends on the walls here. And I said to him, oh, yeah, don't worry, Steve. You know, you'll qualify Scotland for the Euros and your picture will be up there. And he said, yeah, Rogues Gallery. So, you know, and I says, come on, you know, if you're negative, then we're all doomed. But he has that. He's very Scottish, Steve Clarke. You know, I'm not comparing him to the great Scottish managers of the past, but he has that toughness. You know, if you're going into a press conference with Steve Clarke, you want to be on your game. And he has passed that toughness, that mental strength, that self-belief onto his players. It's remarkable. When you look at the team that beat Serbia the other night, he's got two Motherwell defenders in that team. He's got Declan Gallagher and he's got Stephen O'Donnell playing right wing back. Now, a year ago, nobody would have countenanced these two guys being anywhere near the Scotland team that would possibly make a major championships. Not a chance. And he has just turned them into good, solid players. And that's the clarity of his coaching. That's what they say. They all go on the pitch knowing exactly what's expected of them. Exactly what's expected of them.
Very good. Well, Tom English of the BBC, thanks so much for filling us in on all of that. Cheers, Tom.
Cheers, Joe.
A young Giles, he seems to be an inside forward with a very great future.
Oh, there's no question about that at all. He's a wonderful player. He's a very quick football brain. And he was given the opportunity to use it.
The rest of the was headed up by Johansson. Comes to Giles, who shoots, and it's a goal! It's a wonderful goal!
Unforgettable.
Well, I think it was the climate of the times, Jim. You know, I played Manchester United, had my leg broken at Birmingham. And I think during the 60s, it was a very, very tough game. And there was a lot of physical stuff, and I was regarded as a skillful player. And when you're a skillful player, you're a target. And my attitude was, well, if I'm going to make a living in this game and I want to make it, then I'm going to have to be as tough as everybody else. And I set out to do that.
Lorimer will play it wide again for Giles to drive it. And there it is from Johnny Giles.
When we came out of the second division, we scrambled a lot and we played scrambly football. Very tenacious, very resilient in what we're doing, and at times too naughty for our own.
And that looked very much like a right hook by Johnny Giles.
All the things that they say about Leeds, the bad things they say about it, they knew as players that we were a great team.
Giles, Alistair Brown, and again Giles. Good try, it's worth! Oh yes, Johnny Giles!
Bobby Collins was, you remember Bobby Collins? Bobby Collins was a great Scottish player that played for Leeds. And he used to have a saying for the players when he was rating players. Do you know what he used to say? Would he kill his granny? It's true. Would he kill his granny?
Yeah.
And Bobby Collins would kill his granny
right.
And his grandfather.
Okay,
to win,
so what we're saying
to win a match.
What we're saying tonight then, that England have got to get a manager who knows all about back alleys.
Yeah.
And they got to have players who will kill their grannies.
Duncan was a trickster anyway. He could do all sorts of tricks on and off the pitch. He could jump over a mini jar. Did you ever hear about that?
No.
Duncan McKenzie.
What
he did, actually, Jack, he sort of only strolled up to it two or three strides. And I honestly thought he was going to turn back and say, oh, look, lads, I'm only joking. Hopped over it. Hopped over the mini.
In one go.
One go.
Franny Lee. You know, Franny was
Man City.
Man City, yeah. Lad. And Franny could dish it about. As it happened, the players crossed, you know, first person off was Mike Summerby. Do you remember Mike Summerby?
He
could get stuck in as well.
Right.
You know, my reaction was, you keep your fucking nose out. See? And Billy says, have you seen the size of his nose, wee man? You see?
Well, when you see a player playing, Nathan, who needs to kick up the backside, you don't have to know him. You know? Like, if he needs to kick up the backside, he needs to kick up the backside.
Johnny Giles then, with the kick.
He scores! It's 1-0 Leeds! And Bremner leaps to his feet. He could tell by the roar of the crowd.
Thanks, Richie.
Okay, Nathan.
John, good evening to you. How are you?
Good evening, Chair.
John, how are you doing? You're there?
I'm here, Adrian. Yeah. Now, good. Good. I hope everything works out okay, Joe. That's the main thing now.
Thinks that I am unforgettable too.
What a day for he. What a day for the Ireland side. And what a tribute to the man who's masterminded it all, Johnny Giles.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.